Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We booty, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College Ball Show is back, and we're here to discuss, predict, recap, banter, all about everything included in college football. And obviously, if you're a college football fan, this is a great time of year for you. Obviously, we had the long break, which is always kind of crazy. You know, it starts late August, does the college football regular season, and then it's like go for like 14 weeks. Then it just shuts off. And either you're really happy or you're kind of in between, or maybe you're kind of burnt from the last game or two. And then you kind of get a little bit of break. You get the holiday season going, and then you start to get some bowls starting on their way. Now, obviously, a lot of times the first chunk of bowls, the wave of, well, I guess you could say garbage bowl games, you know, sometimes it doesn't do much for you right away. Maybe you're just bored at home, and it's a fourth quarter game, and you're watching Marshall against Colorado State, as I was. You know, it's fun. But as the days go by and the bowl games start to pick up as far as intensity and meaning, I remember, it's almost a week ago now, last Saturday, Texas Tech in South Florida, I should say. That was a really fun game to watch. So was Army in San Diego State. That was another one that kind of caught my eye. Didn't get to see the Fresno State-Houston game as much as I wanted to, but that was another compelling game. And then it kind of fell off a little bit, you know. I remember that Iowa-Boston College game. The Arizona-Purdue game from a couple nights ago, what was that, Wednesday? That was a fun game. That was a really fun game. And then last night, Stanford and TCU put on just a fun, entertaining game. We'll definitely have – we'll start the show, of course, with a quick recap. Nothing too long. It won't be a long segment like normal. But then, of course, we got to look at these two nationally semifinal games. Obviously, Clemson versus Bama, Oklahoma versus Georgia, and then a plethora of other major bowl games. Obviously, Ohio State, USC, Penn State, Washington, Miami, Wisconsin, just to name a few of some of these games that maybe don't have, you know, national title stake at hand, but they're really, really good games, very good matchups. So we'll definitely spend a lot more time bantering and previewing and predicting those games. Won't be a long show today because, like I said, the recap won't, you know, go as long as it normally does. But if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, we are 100% still focused on college football. We've been that way since late August. We'll have a show next week, right? Then we'll have probably one more recap show, and then we go college basketball. We take that all the way to the national title game. We take about a week or 10 days off, and we get right back at it basketball-wise with the NBA playoffs, all the way through the finals, through the draft, and our last show of next year will be the NBA free agency, which obviously is just a hot topic in the summer. The NBA's done really well that way, like the NFL, to stay year-round. But anyway, forget all that stuff right now. College football is the main focus. And, of course, you can listen to the College Ball Show under the umbrella of the Rope-A-Dope Radio podcast. It's available right as we speak here at blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. It streams live here and also archives. It's kind of like the headquarters. But you can also check us out at Player FM, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, in a lot of variety of different places. Also, check out thegruelingtruth.net. It's available. They have a sports podcast network, and that's available on iHeartRadio as well. And also available, of course, everywhere. I just said, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Stitcher, all that good stuff. They got a great sponsor over there, mybookie.ag. That's mybookie.ag. Go visit thegruelingtruth.net. The College Ball Show is definitely happy to be part of that Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. So anyway, Marshall, what says you so far about the bowl season? Now, obviously, like I mentioned, you usually get off to kind of a mild start. If you're lucky, you get a good game here and there. But, you know, when you look up and it says they're both 6-6, it's hard to get, you know, overly excited until maybe the fourth quarter or maybe some just wild stuff's happening. But like I mentioned, as the days go by, we did start to get some fun stuff. Last Saturday was really fun with Texas Tech, South Florida, Army, San Diego State. I mean, and then a couple days ago, Wednesday, that Arizona-Purdue game was a blast to watch. I had a lot of fun watching that. And then obviously last night, Stanford and TCU put on just a great, entertaining game, man. 39-37, TCU gets the victory. And just to kind of wrap up what I was saying, Purdue beats, actually, Arizona 38-35 in a wild back-and-forth game. What has been your thoughts so far? What has stood out for you in the bowl season? Before we start to get to the meat and potatoes, the national semifinals and all the major marquee matchups.
Well, you mentioned mybookie.ag, and that is not my site, but I obviously endorse anyone who chooses to gamble. And the bowl season has treated me well so far, but two things that really stood out to me, if you are watching these games, are the teams who've lost a coach and going through transition really do fall apart. I know that you hear everyone say, oh, we'll be okay. The players want to win for said coach, or said
right.
coach is going to a different school, or said coach is doing this. And almost every team, Chris, that's been in the coach leaving situation has got their butt kicked bad. I mean, to think that in the Louisiana Tech SMU game that a graduate assistant was calling
yeah.
plays.
I was just about to bring that up.
I guess it does give me hope. Like,
right.
my goal is to be a successful coach in life. So to see that, I'm like, well, hell, you never know. But almost every team who's been through a new coaching situation is suffering. And most of them who've lost coaches, like an intern, SMU switched it up and brought in a coach who was taking over next year. But you saw the result of that, of getting smoked. And I heard some report about how he was trying to learn kids' names like the first week he was there, and the next week he had a bowl game. And it's like, well, dude, he got ran off the field, you know. And the other main point I've noticed is back quarterbacks. It's, you know, it's tough that in the Florida International game, like I bet that because their starting quarterback got hurt like the first drive of the game, and he went out. And West Virginia played Utah. And West Virginia, I think if they had Will Greer, would have been an easy winner, but their backup played, and he was just kind of not that good, and Utah won easily. So just from kind of a winning money situation, you know, for the Bulls coming up, I don't believe there's many more situation's like, but if you're, you know, looking to bet a bowl game and the coach is in transition or something like that, it definitely affects the team, Chris. And if a back comes in, I mean, it's just so much added pressure to a dude that really hasn't been put in the situation. Affecting my teams personally, Missouri. That was probably the most Missouri versus Texas and USC, Ohio State are my two biggest anticipated bowl games this year from personal fandom because those are my two teams I gladly support the most. And Missouri, you know, you could kind of tell with their head coach, with their offensive coordinator, but going to be the head coach at UCF, he just left ship. And again, I can respect that, but, you know, Missouri had a guy calling plays who hadn't called plays ever as a coach. And you could just – they never got into a rhythm. And that's a team that was dropping 50 points a game, Chris.
Yeah, they were – it was second half, nothing but a rhythm to end their season, yeah.
Yeah, and I know their second half of their schedule, they played a bunch of teams who were falling off the deep end with, like, Florida and Vandy and Tennessee. But – and one of the players after the game, I kind of appreciate his honesty. He's like, man, I get a job. It is what it is, but – I kind of was upset that Coach Heupel left us. You know, he's like, our offense has been playing great all year. And that coach said pretty much, well, I'm not sticking around for the bowl game, guys. And he said, you know, you got a bunch of 18, 19-year-old kids who are giving it their all, and the coach says, I'm leaving you. Now, I know we can go back and forth on this, and we can have a debate, and we can probably do a full show on this, and we won't. But it is tough on these kids when coaches do leave them, which is why, in my opinion, I definitely applaud Scott Frost, who is going to Nebraska, but had a tremendous run with UCF, and told Nebraska, hey, I'm going to be fully committed to you, but I owe it to my kids to finish off our season against Auburn, and he's coaching them in the game. Whether they win or lose, that's my vote of a coach that's got to mean a lot to his kids. And it's a situation where I get that if you get a new job, you want to leave because recruiting early and all that matters, but maybe it's just because I'm kind of an emotional, like, player's coach myself, and I know I'm at a much younger level. But if I ever get to that point where I could, by the grace of God, leave somewhere, I would do my best to say, hey, let me finish my season with my kids before I go and join you. Or at least not pull a Jimbo Fisher who just left high and dry and didn't even tell his players he's leaving because that – you saw a Twitter from the Florida State quarterback of like, oh, I guess you're gone. Thanks for telling me. It's like, even if you don't want to stick around for a bowl game, so be it, but at least have the decency to tell your kids, hey, I'm going to coach Texas A&M. I wish you all the best. So it's just kind of a rant I'd like to get on, Chris, because I do kind of take the player's side from that situation. But last point that I'll throw this back to you, to counteract this a little bit is the players who are skipping bowl games just because they're worried about being injured. And I'm not a huge fan of West Virginia's coach, Dana Holgorsen, because I just don't think he's that great of a coach. He always seems to get outmatched in big games. But he had a running back say, hey, coach, I really don't want to play in this game. I want to save myself for NFL. And he's like, dude, I don't even need you to practice or come to the bowl game then. I want a kid that's going to play. So on one hand, we've noticed how coaches, I kind of jump on them a little bit. On the other hand, as a coach, and as a player, I kind of, as to me, Chris, it would be tough for me to not play in a bowl game for what y'all have been through. Like, football is one of those sports where you hear so many people breathe, you're a family. Life is a family. Do stuff as a family. You don't want to let your brothers down and all that. And I get that you want to save your health and body, but it would be tough for me to say, hey, guys, I know we just had a great year and I practiced with you for the last 3-4 years of my life, but I'm skipping the bowl game. I'm good. I'll pass. And that kind of pushed me the wrong way, too. And I'll stop there because I know we got to keep moving on. And the bowl games so far haven't been that great, so it's kind of a little easier angle for me to mention this. But I can kind of see both sides of these scenarios, but skipping a bowl game, it's kind of just, to me, it's a slap in the face to your teammates. I get that you're going to be a projected player, but, man, you've been busting your butt and helping your teammates win so much. And then just to leave in a bowl game, and you not playing can cost your team a win. And that's something that matters to guys who aren't going to the pros. So I would have a tough time as an athlete saying, guys, good luck, have fun, but I'm going to sit out and cheer you on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, the the coaches. Well, I'll address the coach thing first. I think we got to figure out a different system, no doubt about it. Even when a coach does finish up with his team, a lot of times it's an older coach and he's just getting one last go and trying, like Virginia Tech a couple years ago, you know, where that team just wants to get one more win for the coach that's been here for 15 years and all that. That's usually the coaches that stay. Now, once in a while, you do get, like you gave examples of both. Every year you get a guy that just dips, you know, it just doesn't say anything. Every year we seem to get a couple of those where you're like, wow. And then we get, you know, a couple that, or at least one that, as far as that's going to a new job, that stays and does, you know, the thing. Just like in coordinators, you know, play a part in this as well, you know, because they're moving on to bigger and better things. And, you know, I'm torn on it. I'm really torn on it because I think we do have to get a general rule. Now, I really wish we could get a general rule because some coaches would like to stay in the universities.
True.
Don't allow it either. You know what I mean? So, or if you're going to get this new opportunity, they, in the contract says you're coming right away. We need recruiting. Cause a lot of times when you go to a new place, you know, even a place like Florida State, they didn't do that good in recruiting this year just because there was so much, you know, it was a bad season, but also, you know, it was kind of the influx of, is this, you know, there was some writing on the wall basically for Jimbo Fisher. And obviously that writing was in permanent ink, but I don't know, man, it is a weird thing because if you're sitting here and you're at, you know, a program and you're trying to get your coach, you paid him all this money, you're thinking, we need a recruit. This is important right now, you know? So we got to get some sort of resolution at some point on this. I totally see your points and I agree with them. But yeah, we can't just go off the coach just ditching, because sometimes they're not allowed to stay anyway, or not ditching. That's a different subject, how you actually leave your team. But yeah, man, yeah. It's a strange process. And you know, when money's involved, you're going to run into this. And I think that's a great transition because we're talking about money involved and the bowl games, obviously, for quite some time. We've expanded these bowl games for so long now that we literally at times over the years we've had 5 and 7 teams get in, numerous sometimes. And I think that plays into it as well. And if you look at these bowl games, you notice how the more high-profile bowl game it is, you don't hear too many players, you know, saying, I'm not going to play, you know. So it's usually the mid-level ones where you'll see players, you know, not playing because they don't want to get hurt for the draft. And that is something that does rub me the wrong way. But then it comes down to money again because it can rub you and me the wrong way, but I'm not going to pay that dude's bill when he gets out of school. You know, I'm not going to, you know, wonder if he gets hurt in that. We've seen people get hurt and break their leg and they drop in the draft. You know what I mean? But since college football and college basketball, the biggest money makers, they can't really, at this point, they can, like if you come back for, let's say in football, if you come back for your senior year, there is insurance for draft stock. So if you come back and ended up hurting yourself, you can go off, basically, and you fall in the draft to, let's say, 6, but then the year before you were like a 2nd or 3rd pick or 2nd to 4th pick, you got that information, that advisory NFL information, and they ranked you there, you can actually get some money to make up for that. Maybe we could institute that in bowl games at a much, you know, smaller scale, but it's easier for us to say that until you tear your ACL and then you drop in the, you know, in the draft. So it's a weird, yeah. It is, man, but we do, I see what you're saying though, with the players, it does rub you the wrong way. No doubt about it. I noticed though, as we go up in the marquee matchup, you don't see players sitting out of games. You know what I mean? So
No one is sitting out tonight of USC Ohio State. And someone easily could be sitting out of USC Ohio State because there's a ton of NFL future talent on that field. So fair point.
And that goes to worth of these bowl games, you know? I mean, I don't know. It is a good discussion to have. Real quick, just to wrap up any kind of recap, last night, though, Stanford TCU put on a show. And Stanford, speaking of putting on a show, I mean, they were up early, 14-3 after the first, 21-3, 21-10 at half. Then it looked like TCU was storming back. Then Bryce Love, you know, breaks off a long, long run. There was a lot of long plays, long runs in that second half, man, for touchdowns. Obviously, a 93-yard, a punt return for, 76 yards. Just a lot of back-and-forth action. But at the end of the day, at the end of the night, 39-37, TCU gets it done. And that was a fun game, no doubt about it, last night. I had a blast watching a good chunk of that after I got home. It was perfect because other games were on at work, so I got home and didn't know anything about it later at night. It was pretty nice. As far as breaking down some of these marquee matchups, we'll wait for the two games in the national semifinal playoff games, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma. We'll wait on that. You know, why not jump right into it? Number 5, Ohio State versus my co-host squad, number 8, USC. Now, obviously, some of the two of the most recognizable programs. It kind of seems it's a nice, like a Rose Bowl throwback Pac-10 or Pac-12 I guess I can say Pac-10 if we're going throwback. You know, it's got that Rose Bowl feel is what I'm saying, except obviously this is in the Cotton Bowl, but both offenses are just known for putting up points. The thing is, they got plenty of, like, defensive talent. It's just, like, on both rosters, but it seems like inconsistencies have kind of kept them from being dominant, you know what I mean, from dominating like they probably should. I would say, as we both probably know, the standout position group is probably the defensive line. We heard it all year. It's definitely come to fruition in some cases, others not. Obviously, you know, that Trojan potent running game to go along with Sam Darnold, that has to be the recipe to at least try to contain the run to be able to put pressure on Sam Darnold because he's not going to be as mobile as JT Barrett, obviously. They like to chuck the ball around a lot more, too, it seems. How do you feel going in this one, man? It's a good matchup, and like I said, it's got that throwback Pac-10, Big Ten, Rose Bowl feel just in the Cotton Bowl.
I'm pretty nervous, I'm going to lie. I do hope that we win. My two big games of the year, my bowl games I want to win was Texas and Mizzou, and props to freaking Texas's puncher. I mean, you and I have watched a lot of football in my life, Chris. I don't know if I've ever seen a game where literally the puncher, hands down, was the MVP of the game. I mean, because both defenses played good, and not to go too long on this, but, I mean, that puncher, he had, I believe he had 11 punts that were inside the 20 and, like, 5 or 6 that were inside the 10 and a couple near the 5. I mean, that dude just, he controlled field position. So it was remarkable. There's a reason he won and is going pro. Good thing he didn't take out the bowl game because, my God, his stock for punchers must be soaring high. But for this game, I think you nailed it. We kind of have harped on it all year about the best thing about Ohio State is their defensive line. It's arguably the best in the country. You can maybe say it's number 2 behind Stanford. But that's always been kind of Urban Meyer.
Forget
like,
Clemson in that,
wheel.
Too.
Yeah, Clemson or Ohio State, maybe you could flip the quarter. I'm not sure who's got more potential, but that's always kind of been Urban Meyer's wheelhouse, is he always has a sick defensive line. And USC's offensive line this year, after the Stanford game, kind of fell apart from injury. So I think the huge matchup is, is one, and I've kind of been tough on this all year, but is T. Martin call a smart offensive game, and will Sam Darnold get into a rhythm, or will Ohio State's defensive line disrupt everything? Because when we've been able to get our running backs running with Jones this year, we've been a pretty good football team. But unless it seems that we're in like a tight fourth quarter situation down touchdown, Sam Darnold hasn't quite gotten into rhythm this year like many people expected. I'm not super scared about the other side of the ball. I know that USC secondary I don't think has been that good, but I also know that Ohio State's quarterback, JT Barrett, sometimes he's hot, sometimes he's not. So I think the bigger situation to deal with is, are we going to be able to score on their defense, or are they going to shut us out? And if they own the field position, Ohio State does have playmakers. I mean, but I don't think that Wisconsin truly had the speed to match up with them. But when you see a dude catch a slant pass, Chris, and it's 70 yards to the house in about 2 seconds after, it's like, okay, you know, they got speed. But pulling for a USC win, I hope this will be a close game. I do think Ohio State playing away from home, which they've really killed people at this year, is a little bit of an advantage. A lot of their huge victories were in Ohio State. This is a neutral site. I expect both fan bases to make it probably 50-50. You got two of the biggest teams in the country. But I just really hope we can find some type of rhythm. And if Sam Darnold can replicate even 50% of what he did last year to Penn State in one of the best performances you could ask from a quarterback in college, I think we'll get a W. But I expect this to be, if USC wins, I see us winning by like a touchdown. I don't see this blowing them out. And my last point is, there's a huge disadvantage for us as a head coach. And I hate saying it, but I got to tip my cap. Urban Meyer's got a massive advantage here. There's been plenty of times this year for USC where I don't think the team came out prepared. Some of that's on players, but some of that is on a coach. And I thought that happened a lot this year. I think the players will be up for this game. But when you've given a team almost a month to prep, and you have Urban Meyer against a guy who I've not been super impressed with this year, I'm kind of scared about that point too. So I'm hoping for, let's go USC 28-24, and they sneak by. And I'm hoping for a win, but I'm a little nervous, but I won't lie.
Yeah, and USC has kind of played to levels too many times this year, whereas it seems like once Ohio State got it going, they're just more consistent. They didn't play at levels as much, but still both teams inconsistent as far as at the high level, because, you know, we could talk about the defensive line, but they gave up 51 to Iowa as well. So I have it Ohio State 34. USC 30. And speaking of like wild games in bowl season where you just can't get a grip of it, this A&M Wake Forest game, you know, A&M comes out 14-0, all systems rolling. And then, what is it, Wolford and Wake Forest just took over. And then it was 38 to like 21 or 28 at half, and here it is, 38-28 at the beginning of the third quarter, and well within scoring range is A&M. That's pretty funny. Another big game, obviously that game's tonight that we were just talking about, the USC-Ohio State game. Penn State, number 9, versus number 11, Washington State got, actually, I thought it'd be a good game with Michigan State. I kind of favored them, and they got walloped. You know, with these guys, Washington and Penn State, I guess you could both say where they are ranked in preseason hype and all that, they both didn't necessarily live up to it, for sure, you know. But I think they both kind of remain hungry to finish strong. You know, it's always good to finish on a high note. And let's be honest, there's just the loads of talented skill players on the field. You know what I mean? So just as a college football fan, that's pretty cool to watch too. Penn State, you know, I say that they got all the way to what, 2 or 3 or something like that. They had some close losses too, you know. So this one is a good game. Both solid coaches here. I'm favoring Penn State in this one, but I'm really on the fence. This one could go both ways for me, man. How do you see this one? I almost said, how do you see this fight breaking down like we were doing the Rope It Up radio podcast?
If this was a boxing match, I'll take Washington with like a knockout in like the 10th round. I think that their defense is the strongest part of their team. Their quarterback, Browning, did not quite have the year that was expected of him. Their defense will be able to contain Saquon Barkley. And I think we found out in the close games, if you can contain him, I don't think McSorley would really graduate up to a level this year of what some people thought he may. So I'm with you. I think it's close. I'm going to lean towards Washington. I just hope that the defense will be able to contain him. And that's pretty much my breakdown. I didn't see them play a terrible amount of games here, but I know Washington was very strong. Head coaching match, as you mentioned, Chris, this is probably a 50-50 coin toss. Maybe you give Peterson a little bit of an advantage because he's been a head coach for longer in bowl games.
Sure.
With Boise State and now Washington. So I lean towards Washington a little bit. On the other hand, you know, for doubting Penn State's offense a little bit tomorrow, Washington, like I said, their offense really just kind of let them down this year for what was supposed to be. I remember the preseason hype when we did our first show of the year. All I heard about was how Browning is supposed to be the best quarterback in the Pac-12 by far this year, and he kind of evaporated more than Sam Darnold. So maybe we'll see who can have a better finale. And obviously these teams did not have embarrassing years. You know, both are playing at 10-2 records. But maybe they both underachieved their dream potential this year by just a little bit. But I'll switch it up on you. I'll take the opposite. I'll take Washington. And I just think they'll find a way to hopefully contain Saquon Barkley. But there's also a great chance that when we do a recap of this, maybe quickly next week, that Saquon Barkley is going to have like 220 rushing yards with like 110 yards receiving and like a punt return for a touchdown. I mean, that's clearly possible. I know
it is his last game.
A little. I know. So, and he's not skipping this one. He's playing. So there is a complete chance that he just has a coming out party as he has done this year and just goes off. So I'm picking Washington, but I hope for the college football fan and me like you that he does put on a show, because I honestly really don't care who wins. I don't think I'll bet the game, and I don't really have a huge preference of fandom ship towards either way, but it would be sweet to see him maybe battle against Washington with just a bunch of like 200 or 300 total offensive yards. And I think whoever does draft him next year is getting a tremendous athlete with a sick amount of future potential, Chris. So hopefully it's a fun one to watch and more of a shootout than what I predict him being a defensive battle, but I'll go with my gut there. So we'll see.
And there are some interesting games like Michigan, South Carolina, Notre Dame, LSU, a couple other games. You know, if this was like a couple of months ago, Iowa State and Memphis, you know, you kind of favor Iowa State there, right? Because of their big upsets. And still, obviously Vegas only has Memphis up by 4 as far as, the spread. 38-35 now. A&M's getting all the way back in the game. So there are some other games. You know, here's a marquee matchup as far as bowl game-wise. But it could be a rude awakening, potentially. Central Florida and Auburn. Now, Central Florida, they've had a really great year. Obviously undefeated. Got a young coach who's moving on. We talked about that earlier. Problem is, they haven't really faced tough defenses all year long, Marshall. And that's exactly what they're running into right now. And you'll also have Auburn having their, you know, Johnson back, their stud running back. I mean, they had two stud running backs this year, and when they need him the most, both of them weren't on the field, unfortunately. But he'll be back. I don't know. It's a 9.5-point spread. there is, you know, there is a scare of this game usually when it's that non-Power 5. Will the team get up? I kind of feel like the ups and downs of this season for Auburn and the way they finished and then to lose like they did, I kind of feel like they're going to be 100% focused. How do you see this breakdown? Because there is some – I mean, obviously, Central Florida can put up points, no doubt about it. But when their defense isn't that good and then they are going against a strong running game, that kind of makes me pick Auburn just based off that. But there is that – you know, there is. We talk about it every year. There are going to be some high-profile, top-tier programs – that don't get up for the bowl game when they take on a non-Power 5. Now, this is an undefeated non-Power 5, so I think all the formulation that I just went through when you're talking about these bowl games, when you're trying to predict them, because they can be tough, as we mentioned our last show. Like, things will happen where you're just like, what the hell's going on? And I thought you put that perfectly. Do you see an upset here, Marshall?
No. And I know some of the people who
kind of
gave
it like
a hard time to that.
You know, that was nice of you. You're like, no.
Some of like the media people have been giving a hard time to that kid that on Central Florida. Like, oh, they don't know the speed that we have as a team. And, you know, I maybe he's joking around a little bit, but.
Well, they do have a recruit. So they probably are pretty fast.
True. Yeah, and I also think Auburn is quite ready. I mean, this is a team that you could argue maybe put on two of the best wins of the year in college football when they're rolling at home against Georgia and Alabama. So I kind of fell in love with the Central Florida team just because I thought they were a great story this year. But I did watch them play, and their defense is not good. I mean, They beat South Florida in a massive shootout. They beat Memphis in that title game in, like, double OT, which is, like, a game in the 50s. You know, they had a tough time even with their defense isn't that great. So if Auburn comes out to play and runs the ball like they can, I just see this defense getting absolutely worse, Chris. And I like the quarterback, Milton, for Central Florida, but – I think he's been lucky to have offensive talent around him that has been better than teams in their conference, because I've seen him make a lot of throws and passes throughout the year where just I don't think he's that great of a quarterback. Now, I'm not saying the dude's a joke. I mean, he took a team to undefeated rush, but he's not what I would call like a high-level quarterback by any means. So when he's going up against a pretty darn good defense, I see Auburn winning this one pretty big. I'll say Auburn wins by like 14 or 20. I think they roll. There is a chance maybe so they don't come out ready to play, but I'm with you. I think they will come out. So I got Auburn winning. Let's go 40. I'll go 42-20. I'll go a little bit of a smack. And it's a great story, but the skill level I think is quite of a difference, and I just don't see how they're going to be able to match up.
Yeah, it is. It is tough. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I don't think they. I mean, they can get it done, of course, but it's not likely. I think that I don't know about a walk in the park per se, but yeah, I agree. I just don't see it happening, man. I really don't see it happening. Who knows though? That'd be something else. That's for sure.
If it did, that would be a sweet, sweet game to talk about next week if they pull off the upset. That would be awesome. I hope we do. I hope we do. But, yeah.
So, we're going to talk number 6, Wisconsin versus number 10, Miami. Obviously, this one... is a little bit more intriguing for me. And it's kind of funny because I'll be working the game tomorrow night at a Badger bar, for Christ's sakes. So that's going to be a little weird. Not really, though. I'm used to it now. Offensively, beyond Taylor, and, you know, a pretty solid offensive line. Obviously, it's Wisconsin. Offensively, they can be a little tricky. They can – not tricky, that's a bad way to put it. But they can hit some big plays. They can do something in the slot. They do have some – I don't know if I'd call it outside threats per se. But offensively, kind of mediocre if the running game's not going. You know what I mean? That's kind of Wisconsin and their Hornibrook, you know, as a young quarterback last year, I thought he played better learning, and now it seems like, I don't know, seems like I'm not saying he's, I guess he just hasn't improved as much. You tend to see, like, leaps, especially after your first year of starting and you're that young. I think he was a redshirt freshman. So there is a chance that he could just have one of those games where Miami's able to contain the run enough to where they got to put it in his hands. And they're good at getting pressure. Obviously, with the turnover chain, they're good at turnovers, especially the last, like, 8 or 9 games of the season. That defense is pretty damn freaking scary for Wisconsin. And I know if you look at the offensive teams they faced throughout the year, some of that, they're not the best defense in the country, even though stats tell you they are. I don't think they are the best, but they're pretty damn up there. You know what I mean? They really are. And I know a lot of people will just look at a stat and say, well, they are, and then obviously some people will do what I just did too, where you go, well, yeah, but did they play a bunch of offensive juggernauts? No, but, you know, they played Ohio State, and they contained them pretty damn well. So that – my thing is, Miami, it's one thing, you know, pretty much – I think it was 3 games in, they lost their running back. They had depth there, and that was okay. But, you know, to lose your wide receiver, your best wide receiver, late in the season, right before the freaking for the conference, you know, final, and then, you know, a couple days before that in the game, sucks. They lost them in practice too, man. But then, you know, that tight end too, man, he's such a good, you know, I'm not saying he's gonna be a star in the pros, but at the college level, you know, blocking and, you know, pass catching, he was just a hell of a player. And to lose, you know, the last week of the season, to lose those top 2 guys, I don't know, man. The offensive line is just pretty good. It's not, I wouldn't say it's high level at all. And then we've had some accuracy problems from the quarterback. You know, he's played really well overall, but man, there's just times where he just misses a guy open, or he doesn't take the check down. He goes to try to force it. He doesn't throw a bunch of picks per se, but he'll maybe try to force it downfield and overthrow a guy when you had a first down sitting right there. So sometimes his footwork isn't the best. But he's a pretty good player. But I don't think they have enough offensively to stay with it. They're going to need some turnovers. You know, the chain's going to have to be active. So with that said, picking the Wisconsin Badgers to win a game later in the fourth quarter and just being able to contain. I think this is a defensive game, you know, period. You know, I really think that. I don't know. I mean, at least they've had
one more.
All right. At least they've had a couple.
Thank you.
Yeah. At least they've had a couple, like, weeks now. You know, it sucks to lose your best tight end, your best wide receiver, the week of, in the game before the conference final. I didn't think we'd beat Clemson anyway, but that sucks, you know. But at least now we've had a couple of weeks to try to tweak some things. So I think that does help a little bit in the long run. But, yeah, I just feel like Wisconsin is just unless they're turning the ball over, I don't know, man. That defense has been pretty solid. And like I said, you can have that argument all you want, But they held, you know, Ohio State to 27 points. So, and the way they, I also think, you know, had this been like mid-season, it took a while for them to start to peak Wisconsin. And but when they did, man, I mean, just looking down the stretch, 45-17, taking on Iowa, ranked at the time, 38-14, doing pretty solid work against a pretty good, a very good Michigan squad. Not awesome or anything like that. They're not ranked anymore. 24-10, just walloped Minnesota, 31-0. So they closed really strong, and that just that one loss. I gotta side with the Badgers, man. Are you able to talk now?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I've kind of become a Badger fan through my best friend, and obviously I'm good friends with you. And so to hear you pick the Hurricanes, I'm kind of like, or the Badgers, I'm kind of like, huh? But I'm going to switch it up and go kind of against, like, a team I would be expected to root for tonight, and I think I got to pick Miami. I just, as long as Miami's
run
defense.
This season, by the way, that's worked wonders. When I picked against them, and they, I mean, this is a blowout now, dude. This is 40-10 now.
I don't see how Wisconsin's quarterback is going to be able to throw the ball without having at least like two interceptions. I think that Jonathan Taylor with the Badgers is a phenomenal running back. But, you know, when you guys got up for the Notre Dame game, who had a quote-unquote great rushing attack, and I know that Notre Dame and Wisconsin are kind of different teams, but, I mean, they still take both a ton of pride in running the ball. So, I think my perspective on this is I think this game easily could be like a 13-10 final. I just see this being complete defense with neither quarterback really being able to break out many plays. I mean, I've been ripping on Hornibrook, but I mean, Miami's quarterback, there was a lot of games here where, you know, when Miami was down at halftime, North Carolina, people were like, what the hell is going on? Carolina's like 2-9, and Miami is like sticking around with them because their offense could get into a rhythm. And that offense ain't changing overnight. So it kind of is literally a perfect matchup of polar opposite teams. Or I should say extremely, extremely similar teams. I switched my vocabulary there. You have two incredible defenses, and offense running backs are good, and the quarterbacks aren't that great. So which quarterback will play slightly better? And I just – the Hornibrook threw a pick in every game this year in the Big Ten, I'm pretty sure, except for – I think he didn't throw a pick against the Gophers. So he played like 11 games and had like, I think, at least 13 or 14 picks. Half of them were pick sixes. And I just don't see how a guy is going to be able to, you know, move the ball against Miami. And the Hurricanes aren't done. They're going to prepare for the run. So I'm going Miami. God, this is, I mean, it's like a cookie cutter match, but it's just been set polar opposites. Let me ask you one question, though, Chris. And this is something that I believe out of the 40 bowl games, six teams have been gifted a home field advantage. I know it helped Navy. It helped Lane Kiffin. Oh, my God, I got to mention my guy for my quota. Lane Kiffin won 50-3. Akron walked into a fire pit. But, you know, there's always been people saying, well, what kind of fans do you get in Miami? And you know, it's the, kind of the same reputation of why do we have pro football teams in L.A.? And the Miami Heat, even when they had their great run for bronze, kind of like, man, fans are coming to the game late, and like LeBron and D Wade are tearing it up. So, how much of an advantage do you think will there be with being a home field? I would assume this is a game that if you're a Miami fan, you get up for. I know the place was going nuts. They played Notre Dame. I know this is a national title contender, and I do know Wisconsin will travel. Wisconsin will bring their own. They, for being a school in the Midwest, they travel very well. But for kind of a long question, how do you feel that the home field is a huge advantage, maybe a minimal advantage? I mean, Wisconsin will bring people, but you'd expect this to be a nice step in the right direction for helping out your team. It shouldn't hurt them in any way, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about, you know, that's what's cool about, they call it the canopy, but that's just a Florida way to say like a basically a roof. You know, it's not, it's coverage. There's open areas, of course. The middle of the field is still there, but a lot of the thing that has to do with Miami is, one, there's a ton of things to do. And two, it's freaking hot as hell. And it's not L.A. hot. You know what I mean? It's not L.A. hot. It's a different beast in the South when it comes to heat. You're getting a little touch of it. You know now a little bit more, just be in Texas. But it's way worse once you get over to the real, real South, you know, the Confederate,
yeah,
thing, I guess you could say, that South, you know, where it's like, it. So seriously, it does, like, when you're sitting there, it's 1 o'clock, and you're just getting beamed on the sun. It's a different ball game, man. And so the combination of that, right, so it helps that they got that canopy in now. It helps the fans majorly. Two, there's just, like I said, there's beaches, there's clubs, there's museums, there's so much other stuff going on, and you're by the water. So, like, I'll just go to the beach and listen, you know, like, it's just the mentality. And although in recent years they haven't been spoiled, but they were so spoiled in a short amount of time in the 80s and 90s that it was like, if you're not competing for a title game, we're not showing up in full force, you know. So this, you know, the last couple of years, last year it started turning a little bit. The last couple of years it had its moments. It would always be, well, I mean, the Florida State or a couple other big games. But the Virginia Tech game really I started seeing, okay, It that home field advantage is something. And in that Notre Dame game, just because there were so many defensive plays in that place, it's kind of like the Vikings stadium where it's louder for the defense by far. It's nuts for the defense, you know what I mean? And obviously in that game, they just went nuts. It was like catnip to those people because all the turnovers and the blowout, 27-0 in the first half. You're like, what the hell's going on, you know? So long story short, I do think it'll be a strong home field advantage, but obviously when they get 15 to 20,000 tickets just given to them where, you know, Miami fans or, you know, Miami in general and Florida people in general can't buy those tickets, then I think it does put a little damper on the home field. But as far as, you know, not having to travel, although travel really doesn't play a part in this because you're there for a while before it. But yeah, I think it's not going to be as strong just because, you know, you do have that allotment of tickets in mass bulk. You know what I mean? So that calms it down. But yeah, you're right. They do have that LA feel where they come late to games where you're like, guys, it's a big game. What the hell are you doing? You know what I mean? But that's just how. That is how it is in Miami, no doubt about it. But so I think there'll be an advantage, no doubt, just because, like, look at the seniors. They already thought that they played their last game, you know, in the Orange Bowl. So, and that is the beauty thing, you know, to have Orange Bowl in Miami. It definitely helped us out in a lot of ways. So I think it'll be there, but maybe not to the extreme, you know, that it would in that Notre Dame game or Virginia Tech game, you know what I mean?
Let me ask you, more interceptions in this game than touchdowns or no?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I think so.
I think we've, you know, I know you briefly did touch on Memphis, Iowa State. We don't need to break down, but that should be a super fun game to watch. I believe that gets the ball rolling tomorrow. In what's be a very fun game. And you will definitely see a lot more points scored in that one than Miami-Wisconsin. If that's not the case, and it is like 50 to 60 in Miami, Wisconsin, Kurtz and I will have a hell of a summary as to what happened with the quarterbacks and the defenses when we see you again. Are you getting ready for the big ones here, or did you want to discuss the Notre Dame-LSU game? I mean, it's kind of
no.
two prominent teams.
Let's go to the big ones.
I don't – okay, good. All right, go LSU, screw Notre Dame. All right. I'll go first, if you don't mind. Okay.
Go for it.
Georgia-Oklahoma. I feel like when we were breaking down the South Florida-Auburn, it was a simple point of, you know, Auburn's going to run the ball, and we don't think South Florida's defense can stop them. Now, I believe from the podcast I listen to and the shows I've watched and kind of the vibe around the sport country is the simple fact that Georgia's going to run the ball and Oklahoma's not going to stop them, and that's it, and they're going to win. But
that's what you've heard around the country? That's like the most you've heard?
That seems to be the consensus of Georgia's. Now, I can't tell if you're being sarcastic with me or not, but it seems like Georgia's just going to run the ball and Oklahoma's defense is garbage. But I think people are undermining a little bit of how good Oklahoma's offense is. Now, I know we've seen plenty of times where you take a Big 12 or Pac-12 offense and put them against an SEC defense, and they get shut down. But I think this Oklahoma offense is maybe a notch of what normally comes from the Pac-12 or Big 12 wins, or even the Big 10 when they face an SEC. So, I haven't heard many people pick Oklahoma, and obviously I'm only one person, and I can only be on social media and watch only certain people on SportsCenter and whatnot. But I feel that's the consensus, and I think this actually should be a pretty close game. If you look in regards to preparation, I know everyone loves Kirby Smart with Georgia, but, dude, Clemson lit him up for almost 50 2 years in a row with championships, and that put my man Kiffin to work in a back-and-forth scoring matchup. So, I mean, the dude's a great head coach. Everyone loves Georgia's defense, but remind you, Clemson lit his Alabama defense up, and I think that defense is probably better than Georgia's this year. And then you're giving Oklahoma time to prepare with Baker Mayfield. I think this game actually should be pretty entertaining. Now, obviously, Oklahoma's defense, Chris, is going to have to play lights out. I think Oklahoma's honestly better matched to play Bama or Clemson than they are Georgia, because Georgia really is predominantly a rushing attack. You know, they got three or four running backs who all seem to be very talented, especially with Chubb kind of leading the way there. But I think it's going to be a good game. I don't see Georgia's defense locking down Baker Mayfield. I think that they're going to struggle to win the time possession game, and Georgia is going to ground and pound them. But I think Oklahoma's offense is going to be able to put a scare into Georgia. And, you know, they're not playing in Georgia. They're not in the SEC, you know, title game again. It's on the West Coast. I don't know what that. I'm gonna pick Oklahoma. This is definitely a heart over the head pick. I think the matchups that people mentioned do favor Georgia, but I think people are kind of slapping in the face at how good an offense Oklahoma has. I mean, this is an Oklahoma offense that was just murdering people all year, and as we mentioned, their defense has gotten slightly better. So if their defense can just find a way to somewhat contain Georgia's game, I think they have themselves a fighter's chance. I do think the right team is favored. Georgia is favored by 2.5. But my head tells me to bet Georgia. My heart says Oklahoma. I think people are undermining their offense. What is your take on the game, Chris?
Well, I wouldn't say – you can make an argument that last year's talent was better on Oklahoma on offense. Because they're running backs, you know, and the tight end.
Yeah.
So that kind of adds to what Baker, you know, the special year Baker Mayfield's having. But I wouldn't say this offense separates themselves from past Pac-12 and Big 12 offenses. I wouldn't say it's separate, like it's a notch above, but I think it's on par with some of that. But also, just how nasty is Georgia defensively? I mean, I see the stats. It's clear as day. But, I mean, how many offensive teams did they, you know, teams with great offenses did they go against too? So, this one's a tough one. It is, because we all know that running the ball is the way you keep that freaking, you know, you keep Baker Mayfield off the field. And they have three running backs, you know, Sony Michael as well. And then the guy that's going to take over for both of them next year, I can't remember his name right now, but anyway, Oklahoma did close as one of the hottest teams. They just stormtrooped their way through the Big 12. Like you mentioned, there has been some improvement. How much? I'd say a fair amount, but it's improvement from complete embarrassment. So I guess we got to keep that in there too. The Sooners D is just going to have to compete hard enough to like contain the running game, just to kind of contain it. You're not going to stop it. Because the Bulldogs, obviously, they like to play sound defense. They like to run the ball. They also, I'm guessing they gained a little confidence, showing that bounce back ability after getting manhandled the first time against Auburn and then turn around and beating them. That's pretty impressive. I'll tell you this, Georgia better not let Oklahoma start fast. You know what I mean? That's for sure. They'll be in a whole lot of problems. I just think that ground game can keep this a game deep into the fourth quarter, but I am picking Oklahoma 31-30. That's what I have. That's what I have in that matchup. What do you say about this trilogy, but in the semifinals? Actually, go ahead. You didn't actually pick a score or anything, did you? I forgot.
Oh,
I don't know.
I'll go Oklahoma. Yeah. 38-35. My one last point, though, then kind of a random rant for you quickly, then we'll get to the big game. I remember when I went to see them play TCU, and one of the fans saying is, we're not really a team that blitzes much in regards to Oklahoma. And maybe that's because they're afraid of leaving their secondary, you know, naked. But I think in this game, if you're Oklahoma, I would assume they're going to go with the approach of, like, let's put eight guys in the box and make the quarterback
run blitz
with his arm. Yeah, and make them throw the ball. And I say that comment because – and I feel like it's honestly a huge slap in the face because ESPN's been doing the commercial where they show Bryant and why am I drawing
Hurts.
A blank on Hurt they show
Hurts.
Hurts and then Baker Mayfield in for Georgia. They don't show the quarterback. And they show Chubb. So it's like, you know, Baker's ready, Hurts is ready, Kelly Bryant's ready, and Nick Chubb is ready. It's kind of like, damn, you know, you got three quarterbacks, and then Georgia's quarterback's like, hey, do I get to, let me know when you want me to shoot the commercial. And they're like, nah, we're good. You can stay out to the side, son. And he's like, oh, really? Like, I feel it's got to be one of those moments where your boy's got to give you shit because it's like, quarterback, and running back. I thought that's just kind of a funny little thing. That's kind of one.
I guess I hadn't noticed
just
that.
Out
that
to
is
me.
Funny though.
Yeah, it's like quarterback. You know, it's all quarterback love, and then it's like, oh yeah, in Georgia, we got running backs. It's like, damn man, what a slap in the face. If I'm that kid, I'm gonna want to shoot the people that I can score on Oklahoma. Hey, you should put me in that damn commercial. I'm gonna go throw some touchdown passes. But we'll see. All right. So now that I got that little comical part out of the way, this game opened up, Chris, as you mentioned, the trilogy. And I believe the consensus in Vegas was Clemson opened up as a 1-point favorite, and it got hammered by everyone. And now Alabama's -3. From the people I listened to, Vegas people, the consensus, I don't think they'll make it 3.5 because when you get up to 3.5, then that kind of opens up the door for, you know, a field goal win and not covering. So I think it'll stay around 3, but I honestly think the wrong team is favored. I think that we're in a situation here, Chris, where Alabama's favored because of their reputation, but I think they're facing a team that they honestly should be an underdog. I think their name has made them a 3-point favorite for this game. Alabama's just my main point, or my main way of picking this game, and I'm picking Clemson, is simply the fact that in big games this year, Alabama's offense really hasn't found itself a rhythm. And I know I've heard mentioned this all year, and you know, start of the year is maybe kind of funny because I obviously did like their OC from back then in Kiffin, but the dude called kind of like an outgoing game and like was able to use their quarterback's running ability. And I feel this year they've become more pro-style traditional offense. And I honestly don't think that's been that beneficial for the quarterback Hurts. But we've heard people say about, well, is he really that good? It's like, well, hell, he almost beat Clemson last year. So I think that's honestly going to be the big play in the game is I don't think that Alabama's offensive play calling is going to give them a chance against Clemson's D. And I just Clemson's D-line is probably the best in the country, if not Ohio State. And just with this pro style of offense, I don't think you're going to beat Clemson. Now, I know obviously Bama's defense does get healed up because the whole kind of hot topic was about how, you know, Bama's linebackers were hurt. I know that played into being a factor. And obviously, you know, everyone's saying, well, you know, Nick Saban, you give him a month to prepare. And it's like, well, the last two times they played Clemson, you know, the coaching levels appeared to be on the same side. Bama's offense, I don't think they're going to get it done. Because Kelly Bryant, I mean, that, you know, he's not Deshaun Watson, obviously, but they had their fair share of tough games on the road. The only game they lost was when he got knocked out on his head and for Syracuse. But I don't know, dude. I've just been, since this game came out, I'm like, I know Bama's going to be favored, but I'm going to take Clemson. I think Clemson wins. Got a score like this, I don't think it's going to be crazy like they've been the last couple of years. I'll go like 31-28 or 31-24. I think Clemson's a better team, Chris. And I don't think this offense is going to get done for Bama. They struggled against Auburn. I see the same thing happening again here. And I just think that it's a reputation that people really just aren't letting it go. I think if you show this to people and you just showed them the film of this year and didn't have the reputation of the team's names with them, that Clemson would be favored. So I'm taking the underdog. What's your way of breaking this down? I know they only touched on one point of Bama's offense, but to me that's my selling point. I'm sure you can probably touch a little bit more, but I'll stop there. But Clemson's going to win, I think.
What's your score?
Let's go 32-24 Clemson.
All right. Fair enough. It's kind of interesting. We do have a chance to have a non-SEC. It's funny. We have a chance to have an all-SEC championship like we did LSU in Bama. What was that, 2011, I think? 2010? Something like that. And we also have a chance to have no SEC teams in the, you know, in the title game, something that hasn't happened in quite some time. Kind of interesting. So you start to play the odds, you know, at some point it's going to happen that they're not going to have any. And at some point we probably know that they're probably going to have both again, you know, in there. Kind of interesting. It's a big ask to expect this national semifinal matchup to play out similar to the last meetings, right? I mean, it's kind of hard to be like, dude, this is going to be even better than the first two games. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that's just not true. Because, you know, 2 years in a row now, both these powerhouse programs have just engaged in some epic, epic battles. Awesome stuff. You know, the stakes are equally as high, though, really, because you're in a win-or-go-home scenario. Like you mentioned, Alabama has Vegas leaning towards the Crimson Tide. That does feel like, you know, past. It really does. Now, we talked about it, how it will help Bama to lick their wounds, that linebacker, and get those guys healthy. But will that be enough to slow down the attack. And when I say attack, I mean both sides of Clemson. You know, usually the shoe is on the other foot when it comes to defensive lines, but that's not the case here. Clemson's definitely a stronger line this year. This is a good game. I have it really close, but I am with you. I'm with Clemson as well. 23-20 is what I got it marked down. I think the quarterback's a little bit better. You know, I think that they probably don't have the best wide receiver Alabama does, but it's about getting the ball to him too, as you mentioned. So
yeah.
I guess it can be a little misleading. You look at some of their, you know, I don't know, man. Sometimes it is easy to be like, nah, this isn't the same Bama team. And then all of a sudden they come out and just, you know, show up. And you're like, wow, okay, this is the Bama team. But even in that Florida State game, you know, week one, it was like, huh, I don't know. They just didn't look as good, like you said, offensively and overall. So,
yeah,
I'm going with Clemson as well, man, 23-20. Definitely. Or not definitely, but, you know, I feel like they're going to – it's kind of crazy, though, Clemson. All right, you got the number one seed, dude. Who you got? Oh, Bama. Oh, okay. Sweet.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, they'd probably rather go against Georgia, but in the same breath, it's like – it's just that mentality, like, God, we got to beat them again this year now. You know, it does kind of mess with you. We'll definitely be back next week, though. Not sure what date's going to work next week. Do you start back up school next week then on Tuesday or what? Or is the gap going
on? Yeah, I'm flying home Tuesday. Got an in-service day Wednesday. I know you always do your boxing. I believe Wednesday night I'm actually going with my buddy to the Mavs and Warriors. So that should be kind of a fun one. Hopefully the Warriors don't have a 26-point choke job like Houston had last night, dear God. But, yeah, I got a pretty open schedule because we don't have a basketball game next week either. So I'm sure we can make something work, my friend.
Yeah, let's hope we can get something done. What time do you get in on Tuesday? You said you're flying home on Tuesday?
I should be in my house at about 7 o'clock. So, and 8 o'clock show Tuesday night will work out perfect because the following day is just a regular in service day with no kids. So,
all righty. Well, we'll see if we can make that happen. I believe we'll be back next Tuesday, which would line up perfectly because obviously those two games that we just broke down, the national semifinals, will be Monday. Late afternoon start Central Time, and then in prime time as well. So, yeah, basically we'll be back next week. And on Tuesday we'll recap what happened from all these games that we just broke down. And then we'll look at the national title game. And then that next week, it may be that next Tuesday after the national title game, January 8th. And then we'll have a week off, and that next week we'll bounce right into college basketball. So those who love college football and college basketball, definitely stay with us. Why don't you get us out of here, my friend?
Dear God, are you working at your restaurant, national title, or you got that day off? Or
not national title, but for the
semifinals. Are you working New Year's Day?
I work New Year's Day, but I could be done by, like, halftime, potentially, of that first game, but definitely by the night.
Okay, we will work something out because I got a family friend that's going to join me, but I think we might have to come down. But we'll make it happen.
Otherwise I could meet you guys halfway, too, you know?
Yeah. Well, to summarize what has been maybe the craziest game of the Bulls, Texas A&M is now up 42-41. They just recovered a fumble,
man,
and are now – I mean, this game was 14-0 in 3 minutes for Texas A&M.
Right.
They blocked a punt and scored, blocked a punt again, deflection, scored on a bomb pass. And I'm thinking, oh, A&M's got this game in the bag. And then it was 31-14 or 31-17, Wake Forest. And you're like, oh, no, A&M's falling apart. And And Chris, this game's still only in the damn third quarter. We're going to hang up our phones and watch the fourth quarter of this 42-41 game. God knows what's going to happen from this point on. But holy cow. I was going to say that the San Diego State Army game might be my bowl game of the year, or is pretty high up there, but I think this one's going to take the cake. So we will get out of here. Hopefully everyone's had a very good Christmas with their family. Health has all been well, and hopefully everyone enjoys a very fun New Year's Eve. And after you wake up from your hangover, you can get in front of a television, get some food in your system, and then go out to watch what should be an incredible night of football. The Oklahoma game is first against Georgia, and I'd imagine probably an hour after that one finishes, you will get to watch Bama against Clemson. So we're in for a hell of a weekend. Chris and I hope we will be back. It appears to be Tuesday. Barring anything with my flights, we'll be rolling and we'll be talking about a bunch of football, hopefully a USC victory, especially, and even a Hurricanes victory that I'm predicting, but Chris is not quite sure, so we'll see how it plays out. Until then, thanks as always for listening. The boys will be back soon. Have a good day. Enjoy your football. We're out.